Welcome to the Sleep Junkies podcast. My name's Jeff Mann. I'm the founder and editor of sleepjunkies.com. And at Sleep Junkies, we cover the whole conversation on sleep. So we talk about sleep science and research. We talk about health. We talk about the sleep industry and sleep technology. We talk about the culture of sleep. Pretty much, if there's anything to do with the topic of sleep, then we're up for talking about it. So the subject of today's podcast is power napping. Now, I'm not sure how many of you out there are regular nappers, fans of napping. There's a lot of stigma about napping at work. It's seen as lazy, it's seen as sleeping on the job. But what's happened in recent years is that napping's had a bit of a resurgence and it's starting to come back into fashion again. And the reason for this is there's been a lot of research in the last few years. There's been tons and tons of public advocacy and just a general increase in awareness about sleep health and sleep science. And people are starting to realize that napping, as opposed to being a negative thing, it could actually be the opposite. Napping can increase your productivity. Napping can combat general fatigue. Napping can have benefits for memory, for cognitive tasks, for creativity. And so napping has caught the public imagination. And in certain circles, in the corporate sphere, in fitness, in health, people are starting to embrace the idea that naps could actually be a positive force for good. And we've seen some of the biggest companies in the world, like Google, installing special nap pods at work so their employees can take breaks. So this is the subject we're going to talk about today. So specifically, we're going to talk a little bit about the science, but we're also going to give you a very practical guide how to nap. And I think you'll find it really interesting, even if you're a skeptic. If you're liking the Sleep Junkies podcast, don't forget to subscribe. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, all those places. And we're also on social media. You can check Sleep Junkies on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But that's it for the introduction. Hope you enjoy. I'm here this morning with Dr. Casper Janssen, and he's from the Netherlands on the other end of the line, not too far away from us in London. And I'm really, really excited and super pleased to have Casper on the line here because we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects to do with sleep. Casper is a specialist in power napping. Good morning, Casper.
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for the introduction, and I'm very excited to be here.
Can you just give us a little introduction about your background? You're a medical doctor and also you've been a researcher.
Yes, I'm a sports physician. So I was trained to treat athletes. And the last few years, I've been treating a lot of elite athletes as well. And my main focus has shifted to recovery and sleep because during those years when I was treating, for example, the Dutch rowers, it was very clear that they needed more recovery. So we saw that when they sleep better, they actually improved their performance. And by looking at their sleep, by monitoring their sleep, we saw that there was room for improvement and also to adjust their training regime. So that was the way I was actually interested in sleep and specifically in power napping. Was a little bit before that. So as a medical doctor, I worked in a hospital and I was doing night shifts. And I noticed that, well, probably you all noticed that after lunch, sometimes you can be sort of sleepy or you're reading a book and you're slowly falling away and thinking, well, I'm not focused here. I'm not getting the text in my head. So I noticed that when I fell asleep, lying on my book, and of course, then you wake up and you are scared and sorry, you're drooling or something. So you think, well, what happened? And then suddenly I noticed that actually after that short nap, I was more focused and I was actually able to read the text and to really get the text in my head. So that was one of the ways that made me aware of the effects of power napping.
So you came to it from kind of an intuitive sort of angle. It's something you...
Exactly. I noticed that it helped me because I was sometimes having difficulty being focused during lectures. And well, you know, that it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. you had a big lunch and you're sitting somewhere at a lecture trying to stay focused, but your attention is going away. You're nodding with your head, and sometimes you think, oh, well, did I actually get the message? So then I noticed that by doing a power nap, I could get rid of the tiredness and get focused again.
So, Casper, can we talk a little bit about the background to napping? There are a lot of myths and there's a lot of stigma, but really it's something that humans have always done since antiquity. And napping, there's a big napping culture all around the world in different parts of the world.
Absolutely.
Can you help dispel some of these myths? Some people think that napping is just for babies and younger kids, or maybe older people. What would you say about that?
Yeah, that's a big thing. Like, people feel napping is being lazy. You don't want to be seen sleeping on the job. And in different countries, like in China, for example, it's really normal to have a power nap at work. And people just know that when you need recovery, you can actually take some time and get recovered to get back to work again after that. So it's sort of a normal thing to do in the Netherlands. And I don't think it's very different in the UK and maybe in the US, I'm not sure. But there's a big thing about napping. Like, some people do it at home, but it's not really normal to do it in public or at work. So I think we need to get rid of the stigma that napping is a lazy thing to do. It's actually being more productive after you had a power nap.
Yeah, so China's got a culture of napping, big culture of napping in Europe, in especially in Southern Europe, siesta
culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Mediterranean is also a good example.
And is it fair to say that it's slowly being phased out, isn't it, siesta culture? I mean, I remember going on holiday, showing my age now, so 20 years ago, so Southern Spain, and literally between the hours of, let's say, 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, all of the shops would be shut. Nothing would be open. And this is the time they would have their siesta. But now, traveling to Europe, I see, you know, pretty much there are pockets of that happening, but I think it's being phased out more and more.
Yeah, of course. Like, Europe is getting into the same rhythm. So industrialization has made us go to a 24-hour rhythm. And specifically has made us going to the 8-hour workday, or maybe even more hours a day, and spend those hours working. And I think probably the North European countries, like the Netherlands, are pushing that you should be active at work during the day, and it's not normal to take a long break. Like, even having lunch at your computer desk is a normal thing to do in the Netherlands. That's a big difference. And I think the Southern European countries try to go with the flow in that respect. But now I think things are changing, because a lot of research has come out the last few years that napping is actually really beneficial for your health and for your productivity, even at work. So I think now people, and especially companies, are becoming more aware of the benefits of napping. So, okay, maybe the siesta is not a big thing to do anymore, but taking a shorter break, power nap at work, is sort of getting a new edge in Europe now.
It's definitely coming a little bit back into fashion. It's slightly ironic, because it's something that humans have done for thousands of years, and then industrialization and the 8-hour workday has forced us to stop napping, and now science is kind of telling us, oh, actually, maybe napping... Maybe napping is a good idea. So can I ask you, what are some of the scientific reasons that humans have had this pattern of sleeping? And maybe we can talk about these ideas of consolidated sleep, biphasic sleep, and polyphasic sleep. Just to explain, so the idea of consolidated sleep is all your sleep is bunched up into one segment of 8 hours, and biphasic sleep, where you'll have two different sections of sleep throughout the day. And then, and there is evidence to say that humans are not naturally monophasic.
No, exactly. So monophasic sleep is actually something that maybe the economy has made us do. So, not long time ago, even my grandfather, who was a farmer, he used to sleep twice a day. So he would wake up early in the morning, have his breakfast, go to his land and work. And then he would come home, have a big lunch and sleep for maybe 1.5 hours and go back to work. So that was for him, the biphasic sleep was a normal thing to do. And so the industry has become bigger and made us go to the 8-hour workday. And that forced us into a different mode. And that made monophasic sleep sort of the standard thing to do, while actually our biological clock wants us to have more periods of sleep during the day. So it's, well, you could say it's counterproductive to have monophasic sleep for a large part of the population.
Yeah, it makes sense. If you're running a big factory, everyone turns up at the same time. You know, you keep the machine switched on for 8 hours. But humans, we're not machines. We have periods of alertness and dips in alertness throughout the day. And this is where the idea of having separate phases of sleep come in.
Absolutely. I would like to explain a bit about that. Like, we always think we're on during the daytime, right? Like you wake up, you're on, you go to bed, you're off. And like you said, we have different phases of alertness during the day. Actually, I like to talk about shifting gears. So I like to talk about when you are active during the day, you want to get something finished, you are likely to shift in a higher gear. And during the day, we keep shifting in a higher gear. So probably at the end of the day, we are in the highest gear and we forget to shift back or even step on the brake. While normally that would be a wise thing to do to give the body and the mind some rest to be able to be active again after the break. The difficulty is that by using a smartphone, screens, blue light, it is really difficult to shift back, to take a break and take a good break, a good quality break. And an example of a good quality break could be using a power nap. It is difficult. So you really have to be aware of your gear. Are you in high gear? And could you shift back during the break? And of course, possibilities for shifting back are like doing mindfulness. I'm not sure if I'm able to make a comment about some mindfulness app, but like Headspace is a good one, I think.
Yep.
And other examples of being aware of in what gear is your body or is your mind actually to ride the waves of alertness and to ride the waves of recovery that your body actually needs.
But I just want to rewind a little bit on what we were talking about, this idea of biphasic sleep, because I think it's quite interesting. I don't think there's actually we've reached the scientific consensus yet, but I think we generally accept that we're not monophasic and sleeping for 8 hours at a time isn't ideal. They call it the postprandial alertness, that after lunch. And Everybody knows after lunch, there's a big slump. You know, if you've got a meeting sometimes and you've had a big lunch, you know, you're nodding off. So that's one idea of this biphasic sleep. So you have a slump there, and you talked about your father who used to get up early and work and would have a nap there.
Yeah.
But we've also, in recent times, we've also had this idea of first and second sleep, which was actually some research by a historian, Eckert, who talked about this idea that going through the historical texts, people used to have a break at sleep at nighttime. And I just want to talk very briefly about that, because that doesn't match up to our natural circadian rhythms, our biology, but it seems to be something that's happened in the past.
What's a big difference from the recent past, actually, because probably it's only in the 20th century that artificial light became a real, I would almost say a real problem. Because back in the days, we would like have candles and maybe a light bulb, but not the bright blue light that we have now in the evening. So our evenings were a lot longer. So when it got dark, became less active, and we went to sleep. And then during our sleep, because the night was so long, we would wake up for a short amount of time, maybe light a candle, read something, do something else, and go back to sleep again. But mainly by like the artificial light, it became difficult for us to go to sleep early, and our evenings became longer. Also, the social culture of doing, well, having free time in the evening and enjoying yourself, going out for dinner or seeing a movie, watching a series on Netflix, all those things made us shift our sleep to later on in the night. And that, I think, one of the explanations for changing from biphasic to monophasic sleep.
Yeah, so we have to find a way to get back to our biology, really, our nature. I mean, it's pretty simple, really, isn't it? The way that you put it, we have to shift different gears, but our biology is telling us to rest or to be active.
Absolutely.
Just one more thing on this aspect. I just want to talk briefly about polyphasic sleep, which has been quite in vogue in recent years, especially with a lot of people who want to get lows and lows done throughout the day. Yeah. And they've found out this idea of polyphasic sleep, which to anybody who doesn't know, there are different polyphasic sleep schedules. But the idea is you don't have to have consolidated sleep. You can break your sleep up into very, very small chunks, 20-minute windows, 40-minute windows.
Like doing 6 power naps a day, every 4 hours. Yeah, that's one of the examples, which is quite extreme. And I've read some stories about people that went well on that, but when they miss one power nap, they feel disastrous. So I think it's pushing your body in sort of survival mode. For example, in elite sports, sailors are doing this, where people maybe sleep for 30 minutes during 8 or 12 hours, and then once and again they go through this scheme. It is possible, but well, it's really challenging your body, and I would say that your body is not functioning optimal. You're really pushing it, and for a short amount of time, if you want to get things done, it's possible. But I'm sure that especially in the long run, it's not good for your body. So you're really depleting your energy stores, and you're not recovery optimal. Because, for example, if you have only power naps, you're in phase 2 sleep. So if you divide sleep in 4 phases, you have like rapid eye movement sleep, phase 1 sleep, phase 2 sleep, and phase 3 sleep, the deep sleep. And we know that in the deep sleep, your brain gives a signal to your body to make growth hormone. And growth hormone is really important for recovery functions of a lot of tissue. So you're missing out on growth hormone, for example, if you're only taking naps.
Yep. Thank you for that. Basically, polyphasic sleep. If you're sailing around the world on your own, fine, do polyphasic sleep. But otherwise, probably not a good idea to
Exactly.
do. So moving on, I know you do workshops for companies and for elite sports as well. So can you give us a list of some of the benefits?
Yeah, so when I do workshops at companies, because they're getting more interested in power napping now, because they see that they should give their employees the possibility to take a rest, have a break, and have an effective break. And when I talk about power napping, I always explain the phases of sleep and why even a short break of 20 minutes, like a real power nap, can help you recover. Well, for a power nap of 20 minutes, it's mainly mental recovery. Of course, it's also physical, because your breathing goes down, your blood pressure goes down, your heart rate goes down, and you come in sort of a recovery state. And even if that's only 20 minutes, it can really help to reset the brain. And a lot of people talk about napping as if you should sleep for 20 minutes, but I think that's not the case. You are winding down for 20 minutes, and maybe you fall asleep for a few minutes. And even those few minutes, and even the winding down, gives the body a rest and the mind a rest, and makes it easier to be alert again. There's been quite some research, for example, from Australia, where they had a study in students who slept for 6 hours, I believe, and they were able to have a short power nap for only 10 minutes. And after those 10 minutes, they were able to be more alert during 3 hours. After the nap. So for 3 hours, they were more alert, less tired. And that's exactly the effect you want to achieve by having a short power nap.
And in terms of performing, you're talking about cognitive tasks, memory. What kinds of things were they experiencing?
Yeah, specifically short-term memory and alertness improved. So performing simple tasks, but also learning. Actually, if you want to learn something, it's a really good idea to, well, read something or try a new routine and then have a power nap and continue learning. Because the power nap, actually, you're able to take up new information after the power nap. So it's a really good idea to use power napping if you're learning for a big exam or if you're upgrading your knowledge on something and have a break after a few hours and continue learning after that.
So does this learning, we hear a lot about memory and memory consolidation happening at night when we've got our big chunk of sleep. So how does this learning periods happen with napping as well? Are there aspects where, for instance, you could do an activity in the morning and then your memory of that activity in the morning would be strengthened later in the day by napping?
Yeah, so there's still being research done on that specific aspect of napping. But from the research that is known right now, we know that, for example, short-term memory is improved by a nap of only 10 or 15 or 20 minutes. And so it would be a good idea to start learning in the morning, for example, have lunch, do a short power nap, and continue learning, because then the memory consolidation will be better and you can actually continue learning on the higher level that you had achieved before lunch. And part of it is because of the circadian rhythm coming together with the higher sleep pressure. So over the day, the sleep pressure increases and your circadian rhythm after lunch is also promoting sleep. So after lunch is a good opportunity, good window of opportunity to take a nap, because circadian rhythm and sleep pressure are close to each other and it's easier to fall asleep.
How about, let's say, some of the work you do with sports people and athletes as well on the recovery side of things?
Thanks for asking. I think that's one of the very interesting subjects on napping. Because as I briefly mentioned, the full cycle nap is really interesting for athletes and people that challenge their body during the day. Because we just talked about the power nap, which is only 20 minutes. And then you have, I call it the oops, I fell asleep, right, which is probably between 30 and 70 minutes.
Right.
And then you can have this jet lagged feeling, like you're disorientated and you feel slow, you feel foggy in your brain. And that's probably because you wake up from deep sleep and you don't want to wake up from deep sleep. And during a full cycle nap, which is actually 90 minutes, so a normal sleep cycle is about 90 minutes. You go through all the phases of sleep and you wake up during the superficial sleep. So phase one or maybe rapid eye movement sleep. And by waking up from superficial phases of sleep, you don't feel this groggy or jet lagged after a nap. And the main benefit from a full cycle nap, if you compare it to a power nap, is that you have release of growth hormone. And this is really interesting for athletes because the growth hormone will give you added recovery during the day. So if you train twice a day, like in the morning, after lunch, even maybe in the evening, you can have a full cycle nap in between, recover from your morning training and be more prepared for the training in the afternoon. So you will have more cell recovery, you'll have more, well, alertness after the nap, so you're more prepared for your training.
Let's talk about the how-to a bit later, but that's interesting. So you're saying there's a broad distinction here between power napping is, you know, mental recovery, mental alertness, and what you call a full cycle nap is going to give you more of a physical recovery.
Yeah, so the power nap will also have some physical benefits, like I explained, slowing of your breathing, slowing of your heart rate, and your blood pressure goes down as well. So power napping does have some physical aspects, but it has mainly mental benefits. And the full cycle nap mainly has physical benefits because of the growth hormone. And this makes it really interesting if you're really challenging your body and you want to have protein synthesis during the daytime. I should explain that maybe. Normally, we have breakdown of protein during the day, and especially if you train hard and you need to recover from the breakdown during the night. So that's when you're having a normal night of sleep, you have protein synthesis. So your protein builds up, muscle builds up again. During a full cycle nap, you can also achieve building up of protein. So being anabolic instead of catabolic, if you want to use those terms.
I just want to ask, I know it's not your specific area, but there's a couple of other instances which spring to mind. And so I'm talking for people who have disrupted sleep schedules. Maybe they're doing shift working. Yeah. And the other one that springs to mind is parents.
Absolutely.
What's some benefits for people in those situations?
Yeah, for young parents, power napping can be really, really nice because you can just have a nap when your baby has one. If you have a short night, if you wake up in the night a few times to care for your baby, then during the daytime, it's a really good idea to have a nap, for example, after lunch, but actually can be done at any time, and to neutralize the effects of the short night that you had.
And the same, I guess, if you're working shifts, if you have to work nights 1 week and then work days the next week, there's no way getting around. That's going to mess up a lot of things, but I guess naps can come in handy in those situations as well.
Yeah, I agree. Also for people doing shift work, it's interesting to look at the napping, but it's more challenging because then you really need to tune in with the biological clock and look at the shift work and see when a nap would be beneficial. And most of the time, if you're doing night shifts, it would be handy to plan a nap before your night shift. So be prepared for sleep loss that you will have. Then you really need to look at the specific schedule for that person to give more advice. But having a power nap before a night shift is generally a really good idea. And even after a night shift, for example, they've done some research on Dutch police agents where they found that a lot of them had problems driving home after the night shift. They fell asleep behind the steering wheel after the night shift. And by having a power nap after the shift, before driving home, they could prevent those accidents from happening.
Can I ask you a question? I'm a big fan of naps, but I've had this experience quite often where I've gone for a nap, a power nap, but I don't actually think I've fallen asleep. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll set my alarm for 20 minutes and the alarm goes off and I'm pretty sure I haven't gone to sleep, but I still feel refreshed afterwards. Now, how does that work if I haven't actually fallen asleep? Or maybe I have fallen asleep, but only for a minute or a couple of minutes. But is it possible that there are any benefits for a nap without actually sleeping?
Yes, I think it's possible. It's probably mainly the slowing of the breathing that actually brings those benefits. But also, when you're falling asleep, and actually, if you only fall asleep for maybe a few seconds, then probably what we think is happening in the brain is sort of a switch off of the brain. So the neurons that normally keep you awake and are active during waking, they get a reset. And by the fact that they're having a reset, they can be challenged more after the nap. What is exactly happening is still a debate and is still a big research topic. But from the research that we know now, it seems that there's sort of a reset. If the reset is only a few minutes, even those few minutes are beneficial. And even the slowing down of the brain and the body going into like in silent mode is beneficial.
Great. Well, thanks for clearing that up, because this is something I haven't actually seen any research about. I wasn't sleeping, but I still felt great after a 20 minute nap. Yeah. And it makes sense the way you explained it. You know, your brain is going into silent mode.
Yeah, exactly. The funny thing is that by the modern wearables, you can actually show that process. So I used the Luna PowerNap mask, which is actually measuring EEG, so brain waves. And during the nap, if you monitor your nap more regularly, you will see that Not every nap is the same. So if you have a 20-minute nap, sometimes you're just relaxed and your brain waves slow down, but you don't fall asleep. And in other times, you fall asleep almost instantly. Like in 5 minutes, you're in phase one sleep. And maybe in 20 minutes, you're almost in phase three sleep. So it also depends on what gear, where you're at before falling in, or before trying a power nap. So it's individual, and it can be different every time you have a nap.
One thing I wanted to mention as well, people who maybe have some sleep issues that we haven't mentioned, and that we should mention.
Absolutely,
that,
I agree.
That where napping is not advised.
Thanks for mentioning that. I think it's a really important point that power napping is not a solution if you have serious sleep problems or mental or physical issues. For example, sleep apnea, having breathing stops during sleep, can cause fatigue during the day. Then you really want to have that problem treated, not using power naps as sort of a, well, superficial relief. If you are worried that you might have a sleep problem, go to your general practitioner.
And I know that if you're doing a CBT program for insomnia, which is becoming more and more common these days, there's an idea that you want to actually build up the sleep pressure. So when it comes to the evening, you want to be as sleepy as possible.
Yeah. So if you have serious insomnia, then it is also not always advised to use power naps. Then actually you should discuss this with your doctor or with your psychologist and try a scheme where you actually increase your fatigue until you're able to sleep normal again. Yeah.
Okay, so I want to get on to the actual practical tips and things that people can take away of how to actually do napping the right way. But I realize we haven't actually talked about something that's really important. And before we do that, and this idea of resistance that people have to napping, they think, oh, maybe I could take a nap. Maybe there is an opportunity in the day, but I don't want to take a nap because I always end up feeling terrible after a nap.
Yeah.
And this is something you mentioned before about waking up, you know, where you go into your deep sleep.
Yeah.
So I just want to talk about sleep inertia, which is that groggy feeling you get. So what would you say to people who say, I'd like to take a nap, but it just always makes me feel really bad?
Yeah, most of those people have experienced sleep inertia while being caught by a nap accidentally. So probably they just were aware of their fatigue and thought, well, let's, I'm lying down and maybe I have a nap or maybe I can relax a bit. And then you wake up suddenly, you think, whoa, what happened? You're disorientated and you're in sleep inertia. That's the main story I hear from people when they tell me about how they experienced a nap that didn't went well. So the first thing is to plan your nap, to have a window, use the window of opportunity after lunch or maybe after you come home from work. And say to yourself in the morning, okay, I didn't have a good night. Didn't have a good night of sleep. And I would like to try a power nap in the afternoon. And then try it a few times in a row. Because it's also, that's new research from New Zealand, where they challenge athletes to have a nap for a few days in a row. And even before a match, they would try power nap. And what they saw, which was only also shown in Japanese research before, is that if you have a few naps in a row, so each day at the same time you try to do a power nap, then your body gets adjusted to doing that power nap. So it's more easy for your body to give in. You don't have to succeed at the first time. It's training. Like it's the same with exercise and sports. You have to train. You have to train power napping. And if you train it well,
right,
you become better at it.
You know, that's really interesting, Paul. So you're saying that don't give up. People might try a nap once and they say, oh, it didn't work for me, and they give up. But you're saying actually you need to work at it. Okay, well, let's go into that. Let's try and give a really practical guide for people who say, right, I've heard about the science of napping. It sounds like a good thing. So how do I actually go about it? So maybe we could talk about a work situation, which is probably the most common situation.
Yeah.
So we're talking about power naps here, aren't we, as opposed to full cycle naps?
So the main thing is to make your management and your colleagues aware of what you're doing. If you're trying to implement power napping in your workday, of course you want to start at home. Because if you don't know how to nap at home, you won't know how to nap at work. So you have to try power napping at home. And if you succeed at a successful power nap at home, you can bring it to your work. And then it's important to talk about, okay, I'm trying a PowerNap, or I need a PowerNap, or I want to try a PowerNap. Talk about the benefits of PowerNapping. Explain to your coworkers why you are doing a PowerNap. So it's not being lazy, but it's actually taking a break to be more productive after nap.
So maybe some of these employees could mention that some of the big tech companies, you know, Google, they're all putting these nap pods. It's a big thing now. They're rolling them out in universities now. So maybe that's something you could mention to your employer and say, look.
Absolutely. In creative environments and in companies that look at lifestyle, it's becoming more popular. But to be honest, most companies, they're still looking at it and saying, okay, it's interesting, but if you really want to do it, it's difficult. So if you're convinced PowerNapping would be beneficial for you, then just mention it. It's beneficial for you. Don't look away if somebody says, well, I still think you're being lazy now. Just explain why you're doing a power nap, when you will do it, and communicate. You might be off the phone for 10 minutes or communicate that you won't be reachable for 10 minutes so that people know what you're doing. If you successfully communicate why you're doing a power nap, then you can plan your power nap. So I actually made a power nap recipe for workers and for athletes. To make it more easy for them. And the first step is what I just mentioned, being aware of the benefits of PowerNap. So then you can go to step two and actually plan your PowerNap. And step three is finding a quiet place somewhere at work. So it could be a couch, or it could be a quiet room where you could lay down maybe a blanket on the floor and just lie down for a few minutes. If you found a quiet spot, you just pick up your smartphone, put the timer on 20 minutes, and you lay down, you focus on your belly breathing. Laying down is step five. Step six, focusing on belly breathing. You can just lie your hand on your belly, on your stomach. And if you feel your belly going up and down, you know you're belly breathing. It helps, because if you're stressed, we tend to breathe higher in our bodies, in our thorax. And going down to a belly breathing will instantly slow down your body and make it more easy to give into a power. The last part, step seven, is getting up. So when you hear your smartphone, get up instantly. Maybe have a splash of fresh water in your face and go back to work again. So don't snooze. Don't lie down too long. You want to get active immediately after your nap.
So let's say you've cleared this with your boss at work and they're fine with it.
Yeah.
What are some other things that might be able to help? So I'm talking about eye masks, earplugs, or, you know, are there any gadgets or are there any special things that people really want to take this seriously?
So step three was finding a quiet spot. And actually, if we go into that, you don't want to be disturbed during your nap. So close the door, make people aware that you're gone for a few minutes. Find a dark place. So if it's possible, close the curtains or bring a face mask. Have some darkness. It will make it a lot easier to go to sleep or to relax. Maybe bring a blanket or use a coat to prevent your body from cooling off too fast.
What do you think about, heard some people say that they use the car, you know, because maybe there isn't anywhere in the office.
Perfect. The car is perfect for power nap because it's a quiet place. You can park in a quiet area. You just use your chair. Flatten your chair, lie down, and relax. And it's a great spot to do a power nap, especially before driving home. So right after work, it's a perfect way of doing a nap.
Okay. If you can get an eye mask, and you're just talking about one of these things that they'll give you out for free on the plane. You don't need anything fancy, but just to block out the lights from your eyes.
Yep. That's perfect.
And I always, you know, when I'm traveling, if I've got a stopover, I'll just use an eye mask and put some foam earplugs in. And I've had some super, super great 20-minute naps on stopovers, and it works wonders.
Yeah, that's a good example. I think it's really individual. So some people like quietness, but some people like noise. So, for example, one of my athletes likes to have one of those books that are read to you. So you just listen to a specific book that you like or that you know, or you use your favorite relaxation music. That can also help. Earplugs are a good idea, but if you're not
feeling completely comfortable, because you won't hear, of course, if somebody's approaching you, then it could be better to just find a quiet place. So that's individual.
Yep. Yep. That's interesting. Sometimes I've, you know, just had an accidental nap on the sofa. You know, family's buzzing around the front room and it's very noisy, but I still managed to have a nap. So it is possible. You don't need total silence.
You feel safe around your family. And that's probably why it's possible for you to fall asleep. Feeling safe is really important for having a successful power nap.
Okay. So what about timing? There's obviously, there must be an optimal window because it's part of our biology here.
Yeah.
What would be some guidelines for doing that? Are there ways that people can find out which might be a better or worse time for them to take a power nap?
Yeah, that's also individual, but the most important windows of opportunity are the mid-morning slump, which I call it, during your coffee break. So some people are sort of amazed, like, well, it's in the morning, I just came out of bed, why should I have a power nap? But because you're awake only for a few hours, it's not as dangerous to get into deep sleep during the nap. So you will have more superficial sleep and you can wake up more easily. So it's actually a good idea, if you had a bad night, to plan your first nap in the coffee break, if it's possible. But that's the first window of opportunity. Second window of opportunity is after lunch. Probably between 2 and 4 p.m., but it might vary for different individuals. And that's the after lunch break.
Yeah. Okay. What about, are there any gadgets for napping that you've used or you recommend? We cover a lot of sleep technology stuff. So
if you really like napping, then I think Luna is a really interesting sleep mask. I mentioned it briefly before. It's a sleep mask. It's from China, and it's actually one of the first masks that is able to measure EEG, so brain waves, and also give back feedback to the user about the intensity or the success of the power nap. So you get a score for relaxation and you get a score for sleep during the nap. So it can help you to build a better nap regime. I think a lot of these new wearables will come out in the next few years. And it's really interesting to follow the improved quality of these wearables. So I think it's getting a lot better. And also the price is going down really fast. So you can get one of those Luna masks for about 100 euros, which is a really good price if you compare it to the more advanced and also better researched tools from Dream is another brand of sleeping masks, but they actually have sleeping aids. So they try to improve your sleep during the night. But Luna is specifically for napping.
Okay, that's a great recommendation. Yeah. Just to make it clear, neither Casper nor myself have any commercial ties to Luna.
No.
So we're just talking about this out of interest.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Briefly, just before we close, can you just give us the same kind of thing, but for a fitness scenario for somebody who is doing this for recovery? Because you're an athlete as well, aren't you? You do running, you do triathlons.
Yeah.
So you very much, you know, you practice this on yourself as well. So.
Absolutely. Well, maybe I can give an example from the time I was training for a marathon.
Yep.
So I ran a few marathons and I noticed that during the last few weeks, when you do your long distance run, like above 20Ks, it's more difficult for your body to recover completely after those runs. And of course, you eat well and you sleep well. But by having a nap after the run, and if it's possible, it's even better to have a good lunch after the run and then have a nap. So you can have the release of growth hormone if you do a full cycle nap, and you can start building protein right after your training. So that's an example of using a full cycle nap for improved recovery after training.
And so that would be directly after a period of exercise, whether it's running or hitting the gym, you know, immediately after is a
good window. So have your training and do your training, have lunch, and then if you feel a little bit tired, give into it and have a full cycle nap. Or if you don't have the time, have a short nap. and you will feel that it improves your recovery, and you will be able to train earlier than normal. So maybe you need 2 days of recovery normally after a long run, but if you have a power nap and you sleep well and you eat well, you can maybe have the next training already the next day. So you can really feel that your body is getting help in recovering from training.
Okay, and with timing, setting the timing, I guess there's more danger of hitting this sleep inertia thing if you're going for a full cycle nap, isn't it? So there are any guidelines to try and minimize the dangers of, you know, waking up in deep sleep?
Yeah, my advice would be only try full cycle nap if you're really tired or if you had a really heavy training, and don't try it if you feel okay. You think, well, I could use a little bit of rest, then just do a power nap. Don't try full cycle nap. Maybe also train your full cycle nap. So try it in the weekend when you have loads of time and you feel relaxed, then try it a few times. And if you get used to trying a full cycle nap, then maybe use it in training as well.
This 90 minutes that we hear about, it's again, we're all individuals, aren't we? So you could set your alarm for 90 minutes, but your sleep cycle may be slightly shorter or longer. So if you, there's no guarantee, is there, that you're going to not wake up in deep sleep if you set a 90-minute alarm?
No, you're right, Jeff. That's true. So in my athletes, I experienced that if they're really tired and had strong training sessions, they could go into deep sleep in less than 20 minutes. So their sleep cycle could be shortened to maybe 60 or 70 minutes, while people that don't train really heavy could have a cycle of maybe 95 minutes. So I agree, it's individual and you should try what works for you. You could fall asleep and wake up from your deep sleep and maybe be jet lagged or have sleep inertia for an hour because it's weekend. So then it's not a problem, but don't try it during your work week.
All right. Well, I'd like to round it up there, Casper, and unless there's anything else we've missed out.
So I also wrote a book on power napping. It's called The Power Nap Paradox. And the paradox, of course, is that still a lot of people think that people who do a power nap are lazy. And I hope I've shown and we've discussed a lot of issues around power napping, but mainly that it makes you more productive, makes you more energized. And it actually also improves your mood. So I think power napping can make you more healthy and more happier. That's maybe a good way to end this session.
Yeah, I'd like to be able to recommend Casper's book, but it's awaiting English translation, isn't it?
Yeah,
so just in Dutch.
It's only available in Dutch, but we have plans to make it available in English this year. Yeah, show you the English version.
You know, as we discussed before, I'm a nap evangelist. I think it's a great thing. It's just that anyone can fit a nap in the day. The benefits are huge. And there aren't really any downsides. Maybe if you get it wrong a couple of times and you experience a bit of sleep inertia, that's the only downside. It's been really interesting talking. And my takeaways from this are that maybe if you're not convinced that napping is for you, basically you've got to give it a try and you've got to practice. You've got to get good at it. It's not like something that's necessarily going to come naturally to you the first time. And if you are skeptical, don't give up the first time it doesn't work for you. Try and get good at it. And eventually you will.
Yeah. Thanks for that clear summary, Jeff.
Thank you, Casper. Really appreciate it.
Okay.
You've been listening to the Sleep Junkies podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes if you can. And also, you can check us out on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and also on the website sleepjunkies.com. We'll see you soon and sleep well. Thank you.